our clients like to sort of keep us running in the background. And then when the time is right, we flag important changes to our clients. It can be on individual physician level or changes off the markets in general that are interesting.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use AI to identify the most relevant and important healthcare professionals with the most potential to shape your market. Key opinion leader or thought leader mapping is an integral part of pharmaceutical marketing. Despite pharma being the most knowledgeable about their drugs, a respected third-party physician is often the preferred source of information for other physicians. The success of many drugs is dependent on the views of the key opinion leaders in their therapy area. So pharmaceutical companies invest a lot of time in ensuring that they map the thought leaders or key opinion leaders in their therapy space. The traditional way this is done is essentially a review of all publications, affiliations, associations, meetings, clinical trial participation, etc. And it's really more based on volume. They're ranked, they're scored. Sometimes there's some additional market research to validate some of that. But then the profiles are created and relationships mapped. But the big mistake that we see with the traditional approach is that they are mapping volume rather than impact. So are you doing that? Are you working with the right key opinion leaders? Today, I'm with Patrick DeBoer, the CEO and co-founder of Peak Data, a company that help pharma identify the right KOLs using artificial intelligence. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Patrick. Shall we start with...
Thanks for having me, Andre. It's a real honor to be here.
Thank you. Can you start with you telling me a little bit about your background and where you started and how you got into this space?
Yeah, happy to. So I have a pure computer science background. I'm one of those guys who wrote their first program when I was nine, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I've been outside playing. And my first larger application when I was 13, that was a computer game used by more than 50,000 people. And thereafter, I got really interested in artificial intelligence when I joined uni at the time. That was in the middle of what's now called the AI winter, when relatively few things got released in artificial intelligence, but it was still really, really interesting to me to see what was going on in the space. And something that sort of kept happening throughout the time since then was that this fear I would constantly be confronted with by people I was talking to, that AI would suddenly replace people and displace them. And since I'm an optimist and I like to see the good things in people and in tools, I thought, hey, can I help find ways how I can bring human intelligence together with AI, so together we can do more than if we're trying to displace each other. That was my focus in research when I was at MIT as well, working in climate change, later on in my PhD, and this topic of the combination of man and machine to improve productivity is with me today also at Peak Data when we improve productivity of pharma commercial teams.
It's interesting because that's also the question I get asked the most as well about replacing. Really? Yes, very much so, constantly. And I agree that augmentation and getting the AI to improve efficiency, but also identify things that humans can't identify, it means that the humans can be focused on things that the AI at the moment can't do. And it can basically augment them really nicely. So, yeah, I think we've got a similar interest in that. So how did Peak Data begin? You know, how did you found the company? What led you to found this company?
Yeah, so for me, I always knew I wanted to start a company. I've been through that crazy ride of building a product that grows very fast twice, you know, first in that computer game when I was 13, and then again at MIT when I helped build this big platform to fight climate change. And I absolutely loved the experience of building something that is then getting used and that, you know, help, that does something that makes people happy or that does good. And I wanted to run that again when time is right. And the moment when time became right, or when time was right, was when my co-founder Michael and I finished our PhDs. So Michael and I, we sat in the same office in our PhDs. We published together. We had countless discussions over crazy ideas about how to push the frontier of the human-machine interface for the better of humanity over the time. So we bonded really closely over that period of our PhDs. And because of a sad personal event, it became really important to us to use our skills to improve patients' lives. And the way how we wanted to go about it was to start a company in that space.
Yeah.
There was only one tiny problem. We had no idea how pharma works at that point in time. So in good old pharma, in good old startup terms, you could call this a massive pivot that we undertook at that point. So what we did to sort of get to know the needs in the space and figure out how our perhaps unique knowledge in that human machine interface for data could be put to use was we started as a consulting firm helping various clients in pharmaceuticals and med devices with different data type problems that, you know, could be solved through data. Did a fair bit of growing, and sort of in our second year, we almost stumbled over a really big need in pharma that would later become our product, and did a lot more growing afterwards.
And so tell us what the need was.
Question. everyone will surely be aware that there's this big trend in pharma of using smaller and smaller commercial teams over mm-hmm. time, and ongoing for a long time. And, you know, despite the reduction in the team size, the goalpost actually has unchanged. We still want our HCPs to be aware of our new or existing treatments that is out there. And we want as many HCPs as possible to give us a chance to show that our treatment works. So that is sort of a bit of a disconnect right there. And that means there's clearly a need to increase the productivity of your, you know, shrinking teams. So you can still meet that not unchanged goalpost of making sure that your physicians are aware. So that's where we come in.
Yeah.
We support pharma commercial teams engaging with those HCPs that have the highest impact on medicine adoption across your markets. So KOLs are actually only the start of that journey, because ultimately our clients will interact with physicians who are a bit less on the academic side and much more about seeing patients and, you know, being out there. Yeah. And actually that second part, that is finding those, that's our specialty, finding the people who will have a big impact on who is actually seeing the patient. So ultimately our clients end up with a much more effective and precise targeting.
I love that, because for lots of reasons. One is we did a project like this a while ago, and what we found was, despite all the solutions out there that were not AI, that were out there that the pharma were already buying, what we found was on most of those lists were what we called LOLs, which is loud opinion leaders, but they didn't have the impact. And so the ones that actually had the impact, many of them were actually missing from the list. And there was one project we did where the number one key opinion leader in a particular therapy space was not on the pharma's list for any aspect of their, you know, from clinical, R&D, clinical, marketing, medical affairs, nothing. They, and this was the number one, no matter how you cut the data, this was the number one person in the space. So I love the fact that you look at impact. And I think that's what's missing from most of the KOL tools that I've seen out there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And even though there's plenty providers out there doing that, helping companies figure out who are KOLs, still, every time we engage with a client who built, you know, their target lists, let's say, or their KOL lists through some of these tools, we end up finding individuals that were somehow missed. But we can truly show, hey, these are, you know, you should really talk to these people. They're clearly among the movers and shakers in your space. Maybe they don't publish every day in Nature, but clearly they have an impact.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's what you want. You want the impact more than anything else. You don't, because there's a lot of physicians, you know, years ago I worked in an agency and we did a lot of, you know, symposia and things for pharma. And there's a lot of physicians that are basically just on every pharma's talk list because they just like going to conferences and speaking. But no one's really paying that much attention because all the other doctors realize what they're doing. So, you know, it makes a huge difference having an impact. That's the key. And I think that's really, really impressive that you're doing that. So is Peak Data, is the tool a platform that you put new data into? Tell me about how it all works.
Yeah, happy to. So essentially, let me tell you a bit more about the sort of the data side of it.
And then I'll tell you
how that is actually then being used by clients. Essentially, we combine data from three places. We essentially find and use all the data that is scattered out there in the public web. That of course is PubMed and clinical trials, but there's far beyond PubMed and clinical trials because there's millions of websites out there where your HCPs could leave their little breadcrumbs. And it can be really hard to bring all these little pieces together and then create a bit of a picture of each of your HCPs in your relevant markets. So we take all that public data that we can find, anything scattered throughout the public web, and combine it with data that we get through our partners, social media platforms or otherwise. And third, we combine that with all the data that we get from our clients. Now, I think that is a non-obvious one because quite often I see that this didn't happen. But actually, often, you know, some really interesting things happen at the intersection between data sets.
Yeah.
So when you start with the data you already have and you layer additional data on top, some really interesting stuff can start surfacing at that point. So we combine these three things, data that pharma companies have, maybe they buy it, you know, it could be prescription data, it could be whatever, omni-channel data, data for partners and public data. And then we use AI to bring it all together because they're all in different formats, and you know, Dr. Patrick is not called Dr. Patrick across all these data sets in the same way. So there's,
and sometimes you've got two Dr. Patricks with the same name that they're different guys. Yeah,
exactly. And worst case, they're also in the same therapy area.
Exactly. Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, me too. But you know, making sense of that combination is sort of the starting point, and getting to a really high quality basis to start. And then we use AI to identify physicians that have the greatest impact on your product's adoption curve based on your strategic priorities. Now, what does that mean? So sometimes you want to go after physicians who see a lot of patients.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to go after physicians who are willing to try new things. Sometimes you want to go after people who tell their friends about it.
Yeah.
about, you know, certain things that they're doing. Sometimes you just want to land in places that have a habit of changing their formulary quickly. Sometimes you want to go after physicians that are often using a particular competitor, and you know your strategy is often one or two or a combination of these things, how you get to market. And that is how we set sort of our optimization targets in close collaboration with the strategy of our client. This is how we intend to go to market. So that's the optimization target. At that point we identify the people that lend themselves most well to this strategy. Our client then approaches these through their sales team. A couple months in, you will have observed that any good sales team changes things in the market. So this isn't static. The market isn't static. So you don't have the same people who are your most important people for your strategy 6 months after you started working that strategy. Ideally, the strategy should work, right? It should, it should change something. So what's interesting is that after a while of using our data, our subscription, we will find new people talking about your particular treatment, or new people who start having an impact into their space, because you'd like to disperse sort of your message initially through an initial group of people, but then you will infect more and more people to talk about, become impactful in your space. So that's why our clients like to sort of keep us running in the background. And then when the time is right, we flag important changes to our clients. It can be on an individual physician level or changes off the markets in general that are interesting.
And I suspect that you can also find up and coming opinion leaders.
There you go.
Yeah, because the traditional approaches, because they're largely based on volume, don't seem to do that. Whereas at least with the AI approaches, we can start to see who is going to be an up-and-coming person that no other pharma has targeted yet, which gives another advantage to using AI for it, for sure.
Exactly, because you want to engage with those people early on, help them establish.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much of, it sounds like you've got a huge amount of data from public data. How much of the physician universe can you map?
Yeah, so today we're primarily focused around Europe, where data is a bit of a challenge. And in Europe, even though data is a bit of a challenge, we typically map 80 to 90% of all treating physicians in a space.
Nice.
Why is that important? It's really important because because only through that high coverage you're able to find your most impactful prescribers, because you see who's impacting whom, and you're only then able to truly observe changes in the market.
Have you got plans to expand that to the US?
Ultimately, the US certainly is interesting for us, yes.
Yeah, because the data is just so much more accessible. So I suspect, you know, once you've done 80, 90% in Europe, you'll be basically 100% in the US, because it's just going to be so easy compared to Europe.
100%.
Yeah. And how do you get the impact rather than the volume traditional approach? How does the AI work to give you that impact factor?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Essentially, it's because we don't stop at just observing the content that people put out, or the content that we can relate people to. But fundamentally, we also look at what does that do to the audience of these people. So whom can they reach, and how does that change the people that they reach?
Yeah.
So for example, we would look at who are the people that are typically reacting to things that have been put out there by a certain person, and then formulating it as a bit of a recursive problem. The people who are reacting to that content, are they also relevant to your commercial strategy again, or are they, you know, completely outside what you care about? So that means that you have this reinforcing cycle. The more important the people are, or the more relevant the people are who are reacting to your content, the more interesting this gets for you.
I love also, because it's one of my key obsessions, that you're very strategy focused as well. So you're looking at the client strategy and then you're building the AI around how does this help the strategy, which I find a lot of companies don't do that. So it's really nice to keep hearing you say looking at the strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to do that. And typically breaking down that strategy into measurable things that we can, as you know, in AI, you typically have some kind of learning problem. That you try to break in some way. And it's often down to making sure that we have that and then run the process in that way.
Yeah, exactly. And so let's look at the data for a moment. So out of the public data, what kind of public data do you put in there? How do you find all these digital breadcrumbs? Because that in itself is a challenge.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, we use medical scientific data like PubMed and clinicaltrials.gov. Yeah. There are some national trial registries and national publication registries. So we use those. But I think the true power of what we do comes from us crawling the wide web. So essentially go out there and find anything that has something to do with the
topic.
The topic, the area that our clients are active in. And then the big problem that we're solving, one of the areas that we're using AI for, is that there will be a lot of stuff that is simply not relevant to our client, that huge, huge data set. Because again, it's
crawling,
the web is big.
that question.
And so probably most of our investment actually goes into getting to a really high quality data set where we use AI to first and foremost to get that raw data into a really good shape or we can use it to drive any insight.
Yeah, and that's always the biggest part, of course, of any AI project is sorting the data. And we've got one project at the moment that is similar. It's going through all of the internet to find things that are specific to one little thing, but doing the large language models to do that and not using ChatGPT because it's not as compliant. Exactly. It's a big task in itself, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I was going to say, I also really love that intersection because of, you know, the client data, the public data, the breadcrumbs, et cetera, because, you know, going AI first obviously is a great strategy, but then when everyone else goes AI, you know, a lot of people can do great algorithms, a lot of people can do supercomputing. So the real differentiator between a lot of these is the data, and that richness of the data is what gives obviously any good algorithms as well, but that gives you that competitive edge, which it sounds like you're doing streets ahead of anyone else I've seen in this space.
100%. And, you know, I'm always staggered to see how much data our clients are already buying and how that would actually be accessible, but often only a small part of that potential actually gets used. So the idea is to bring it all together and then let's make sure that you benefit from everything brought together into one place.
Yeah. Although on the counter side of that, I do see a lot of companies postponing all of these kind of initiatives till they do a data lake. And part of that is a bit frustrating because what I do see is that they put everything into the data lake and a lot of it isn't useful. So you could actually do these kind of projects without creating that data lake first, but choosing the right data as you are doing and combining that rather than just every single piece of data in the company.
True. Yeah, we don't need a data lake to start working and provide
exactly. that. Exactly. I know. I always tell people, you don't need that to start. And what about digital influencers? Do you also map digital influencers?
We do. We have a bit of a special take on it. Mm-hmm. Because again, of your point, what you mentioned earlier, LOLs, loud opinion leaders, you could easily be led astray and go after digital opinion leaders that just are relatively loud in a space.
That's
but then
true.
The people following them or the people listening to them might be not the people that you want to reach. That might not be your target audience.
Absolutely.
So we are calling it digital activators instead. And
I like that.
The idea is that we specifically go after digital activators that have a high impact on your target audience. So that is people that you have on your target list. We need to have some signal that they interact with that digital activator for us to gain any confidence that these are right people for you to go after.
That's a really good point, because I do see with traditional non-pharma influencer platforms, and you look, and if you look at the followers, in some cases they, there was one I saw that was an American, but all of their followers were in Turkey for some weird reason, and they weren't the right, you know, what the target audience of what they were selling themselves at.
Exactly.
So
yeah, we see that.
Yeah.
As well.
You sometimes wonder with those whether there's some kind of, they paid someone to do something or something like that. Yeah, could be. So what about BioPharma? Is it mainly for key opinion leader and digital activators that they use your services for the peak data?
So it's actually mostly about targeting, what we call agile targeting. So that's building and validating with a telescopic precision based on your strategy and keeping that up to date, whom you should be speaking to on an ongoing basis in an objective and data-driven way.
That's true, and that's essentially the bottom line of key opinion leader, isn't it? It's agile targeting in a way. Have you got a case study you could share of what a client was doing before they used your services and what they did after? For example, you know, a lot of the pharma that I see are using at least three different key opinion leader softwares and not getting great results. So could you give an example of, you know, how you came into that process and what your client got from it?
Yeah, happy to. So can't name the client.
Of course, yes, no, I understand.
But it's a top 10 biopharma. They were using all three major competitors in our space. And they had a drug launched during COVID where the uptake was a bit below forecast in Europe. So they engaged with us so we could optimize their targeting and improve their sales conversations and also help them engage with digital activators. So I have three things to share that we achieved in that space. First, on targeting, we essentially validated the list that they went to market with our data, and based on their go-to-market strategy, used that as an input and really checked, are you talking to the right people given that, you know, X is your strategy? And long and behold, we saw quite a significant deviation between what they were using and what we saw coming back from the algorithm. And I think the finding to drive this home the best was that in the top 100 people that we uncovered, about half, they weren't even visiting.
Wow. Yeah, so I've seen that too.
That was quite significant. And they subsequently updated their target list, started visiting the new group, had positive response by the sales team. So, you know, we could stop there, but I think the second interesting aspect of this also is worth highlighting, which is after 6 months in that company, they would refresh the targeting twice a year. After 6 months, they refreshed the targeting and their sales force had done a good job changing the market. And we found more than 10% new impactful HCPs after half a year. Several of them actually, the sales force had then found to have very high patient potential.
Nice.
So it's not just a change to the target list, but also several of them had significant patients.
That's really impressive. That's really cool. I can see so many advantages in what you do compared to other KOL programs I've seen, but certainly that agile targeting and the impact factor, I think, are two things that really make you stand out ahead and shoulders above the others. It's really impressive. So what's next for Peak Data?
We are on a path to provide our product throughout the world. We would like as many big biopharma companies and smaller biopharma companies to start working with it. But we don't want to stop at targeting and providing data. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we want to become a platform for medicine adoption, the one environment that brings everything together related to medicine adoption, because several, you know, that fate that I just shared of that one case study, falling behind the forecast, that happens to more to about half of all the drugs when they get launched.
Yeah.
And it just occurs to me that there's a need in the space to have one environment that brings everything together and make sure that you don't reinvent the wheel in the same company, in the same brand, when you get to market.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, really, really interesting conversation. For anyone listening who has got their curiosity piqued like I did, and want to get in touch with Patrick and his team, if you go to peakdata.com, you will be able to reach out and see what they're doing in more detail and even speak with Patrick. So thank you so much for your time today. Really, really interesting area, and congratulations, really impressive.
Thank you very much for having me here today, Andre, and thank you to your to all the listeners listening to us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.